Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. A glorious Monday in the Pacific Northwest. If you live in the area, if you don't, I hope you're having beautiful weather like we are. We'll talk more about that in a moment because how could we not? We have a jam-packed show today. There are two new candidates who have announced bids for Seattle City Council. Could not be more different. One of them I have a little track record with, a little baggage with, so I very much look forward to talking about that campaign in a moment. And for those of you who don't live in Seattle, you might be wondering, well, Brandy, why do I care about Seattle City Council? Because what happens in Seattle, we know, finds its tentacles throughout the state. West Coast cities who come up with wild, crazy ideas that they're willing to push, it goes to other West Coast cities, ends up in Washington, D.C. So it never happens on an island, doesn't happen in a vacuum. So it's important to really push to have some change in the Seattle City Council this year when there are so many seats up for grabs. Also coming up, we'll play part of our interview with Dr. Raul Garcia. He's a Republican who just on Friday launched his campaign to be the governor of Washington. We played a full conversation with him, an hour-long conversation on Sundays with subscribers yesterday, and part of that included whether he has a chance in the world. And he and I had a frank conversation about just how hard it is for Republicans to win in Washington State. So we'll play a clip of that. Coming up in Unbelievable today, man, we had Tiffany Smiley on the show yesterday, Sundays with Subscribers. And then this Seattle Times article came out questioning where money donations to her PAC are actually being spent. And I have to say, I'm a little peeved off by this. So we'll talk about it in Unbelievable. A lot more to get to. But first, Nicole, greetings to you on this beautiful Monday.
Hi, Brandy.
What'd you do this weekend? It was hot.
It was so hot. It was beautiful. You know, I hung out with my mom on Mother's Day.
Oh, that's nice.
We had a nice barbecue.
Your mom's so sweet. Oh, my gosh.
We did a, at my brother and sister-in-law's, we did a movie outdoors. So we had like a screen outdoors, watched Fast and Furious.
Which
first
one?
One
through 30. Which
it
one?
It had been okay, a while the first since one. We had seen the first one. So yeah, we okay. did a big outdoor movie. It was really fun.
Awesome. I always do a poll to start the live show over on YouTube, and my poll is really a soft one today. It's will the Kraken win tonight? And 19% said no, which is just kind of rude. I don't know if we have Dallas
have
fans or something. I don't know. I promise I have a more hard-hitting poll later in the show, but go Kraken. That's very exciting. Somebody, I was tweeting over the weekend about, oh, hockey in Seattle just feels right, and some trolls were like, fair weather fan. It's like, no, I've been to many a Kraken game before. We've been to many
yes.
a Kraken game before they were winning,
yep.
and I'm from Minnesota, so hockey's just in my blood.
Right.
Yeah,
rude.
Fair with. I love how my trolls
they're
will find any
year.
Reason to troll me. I love how they'll find, yeah, and they're in their second year as if I think everyone's a bandwagon
mm-hmm.
fan because they're brand new.
Exactly.
Anyway, I have some hot political news to get to. Nicole, thank you. We'll check
mm-hmm.
in with you momentarily. Two candidates have just announced their bids for Seattle City Council. In case you're not familiar with sort of how the race is shaping up and why this year is so consequential, 7 of 9 city council seats will be on the ballot in November. And in 5 of them, the incumbents aren't running. So you really have an opportunity to either screw things up badly if you're Seattle voters or put people in there who are going to help turn the city around. And I've said this many times, I said it off the top of the show, what happens in Seattle doesn't stay in Seattle. And so even I don't live in Seattle anymore. I'm glad I don't live in Seattle anymore. Although, you know, I'd like to be able to go back and visit without feeling scared for my safety. But it's important for all of us to look at what's happening in Seattle and to lift up candidates that have a little bit of common sense and are going to help turn things around. And also just show that in Seattle, one of the most progressive places in America, that we're not going to stand for these candidates with wild ideas and insane ideologies anymore. So anyway, I'm going to start with some good news. Nicole's like, let's do this story first because it's good news. Olga Sagan, man. Olga Sagan announced on Mother's Day that she is running for Seattle City Council position 7, which is the position for downtown Seattle, the most consequential Seattle City Council position. First of all, Nicole, if you could join me in a little golf clap. I'm going to be fully transparent because that's what we do on this show. I donated to my first political candidate last night.
Wow.
I mean, because of my job, previously, we weren't allowed to donate to PACs, donate to political candidates. Now I can. I just will always be transparent with you guys if I'm going to donate to a political candidate, because I'm not going to donate to candidates behind the scene and then, like, you know, act like I didn't support them on the air. That's not a thing. So I donate. I maxed out for Ole Sagan last night.
Love it.
Best $300 I've ever spent. That's the max out for a candidate.
It is?
Yeah, $300. Wow. Best $300 I've ever spent. So a little bit of background on Olga Sagan. I'll just cut out coffee for a month, okay? I'm going to keep making my coffee
That's
at home.
That's the best $300. I love it.
A little background on Olga Sagan and why I'm thrilled about this. So we've had her on Undivided multiple times. And one of the first times we had her on this show, I mean, I'd interviewed her when I was with Fox, but on this show was in February of 2022. There had been this slew of violent crime down where one of her, she's the owner of Proshky Proshky, which is a Russian bakery in Seattle. And she had opened a location on 3rd Avenue on like that terrible block by the McDonald's of Death down there where all the shootings happened, because it was during this period, like around 2018, where the city promised this renaissance for small businesses on in the Pike Pine Corridor. And she's like, okay, I'm a Seattle business owner. I want to help out with this renaissance. So I'm going to open a location of Proshky Proshky on 3rd Avenue. Well, it didn't take long before things absolutely went downhill. And so we did this story on the podcast in February of 2022 after she decided there was this shooting that she had to close the doors of that location. And when we had her on at the time, she was completely fed up with Seattle government. Here's that clip.
Outside Proshky Proshky, which looked like this just a week ago, the area was cleared out by Friday afternoon, but not nearly soon enough for owner Olga Sagan.
It's just banging your head against the wall at this point.
It was the deadly shooting last Sunday that finally forced her hand. The bakery's surveillance video captured people running from the sounds of gunshots outside.
It's the third one in a month. So as a responsible business owner, I'm putting my employees and customers on the line to be shot. I mean, I don't want to wait till it's too late and my business is done because some of my employees died and I'm carrying this with me. I mean, my employee safety is my number one priority. My customer safety is right up there. We would open at 7 a.m., come out in the morning. If there was anybody here, we would ask them to kind of, you know, just please, if you can step away, this is a private property. This was meant for people to have pastries here, and they would. They would stand here, have their coffee, have their pastry. This shelf here that now is a, you know, drug shelf.
Olga opened this location in 2018 during what was billed as the Pike and Pine Renaissance, a project aimed at making this area the, quote, best pedestrian experience in the city. Some renaissance that turned out to be.
I mean, how long of my life do I need to spend on one specific location? You know, I had, again, 15 employees here. As I said, we had, I'm transparent with my number, we had 800,000 in sales a year. And going from that to thinking about my employees getting shot.
Yeah. So she was very fed up when we talked to her in February 2022, basically wanted nothing to do with Seattle city government anymore, had tried so many times to reach out to them, her elected leaders, her councilman, Andrew Lewis, like to no avail, and was so frustrated. So fast forward, she ended up opening that location back up when Bruce Carroll came in and he was dedicating more resources to that area. And you might recall just back in March, we had Olga Sagan on the show. And she broke the news on our show that she was considering a run for Seattle City Council. Here's that clip.
I cannot sit at my home, in my home, and watch Netflix and be angry at government. I need to say things and keep them accountable as individual, because it is up to us. It is up to us in the city, in the state, in the country to make government accountable. Or if they don't want to be accountable, fine. But it's up to us to speak up and not just, you know, step over home people without housing or drug addicts or people with mental illness. Go home, turn your TV and be like, oh, this is disgusting outside. I don't think that's who we should be.
How far are you willing to take that sentiment? You know, I have tried to shame you into running for something. I know other people have tried to as well.
I'm I'm considering running for city council. I know that we have election this year, and I have been thinking about it, and I have been really struggling with that decision, because I know that if I put my hands and heart and soul into something, it's going to be overly, I will put everything I got. And always we come in as a female, as an immigrant, as a business owner, we have all those insecurities to, am I qualified? Am I qualified to run? But then I look at some other city councils we have, I'm like, well, if they're qualified, I should be qualified, you know? But I'm not a career politician, and that's kind of throws me off. I'm more after, you know, after making downtown better, making downtown safe, having it all inclusive and taking care of people. So I am considering running for position 7. I think the goal is to have downtown be in a better shape.
Love it. So that was 2 months ago. Fast forward 2 months. Olga Sagan is running for Seattle City Council, made the announcement. Mom of three girls made the announcement on Mother's Day, shared on her Twitter an open letter that her daughter wrote about watching her mom for all these years, you know, run a business and try to advocate for the city and, you know, coming to this conclusion that she really wants her mom to step forward and do this. And I know when Olga and I chatted, her family considerations were a big part of it. So I think this is great. I think that more small business owners in the city of Seattle need to step up. And look, Olga Sagan, you know, she shares the progressive values of Seattle, but she's got common sense. And she can look outside of her bakery and see that what's happening is not something to be proud of. And so I think when you put some, and also I'll say about Olga, she's not running for one of the unopposed seats. Andrew Lewis is running to keep his job. Someone who's flip-flop on police defunding, who just puts his little finger up in the air, you know, licks his finger, puts in the air, figures out which way the wind is blowing and decides, oh, that's where I'm going to be right now. Just started caring about the crime issue in downtown Seattle in the last year. So she's going to be challenging him. But someone like Olga Sagan, who was speaking up and has spoken up in this city as a business owner when it is not easy to do so, when you are vilified and labeled for just saying what's true, that you shouldn't have to, as a small business owner, look outside, have a little shelf that's meant for pastries and have it be a drug den where people are shooting up and smoking drugs. That she shouldn't have to worry about her young employees and her customers fleeing from gunfire down the street. It is hard to just say the obvious in Seattle, and she has done it for years and has been vilified by far-left activists as a result. And so I think Olga Sagan can be really, really good for the city of Seattle. And gosh, if we could get her and six other people with a bit of common sense in those positions, Seattle would be in such a good spot. And it would show that class of politicians, the far-left activist politicians, maybe the ones who serve in the state legislature from the Seattle area, that Seattle voters have had enough of people with that ideology pushing policies that are destroying a once beautiful city and a once beautiful state. So Olga Sagan, awesome. We're going to have her on the show. She's going to have a press conference first and wanted to do it after her official sort of launch press conference. So that's good news. Now, let me juxtapose that next to some very, very different candidate. So there was another candidate, I think just yesterday, signed up and said that they're going to run for District 5, which is a position currently held by Deborah Juarez, who is not running anymore, not running to keep her seat. So it's an open position. Does this, I'm going to show viewers a picture of a woman, and you tell me if this woman looks familiar to anyone. Anybody? Well, if you're not watching, I'm showing a picture of Nicole Thomas Kennedy. That name will probably sound familiar because she ran for Seattle City Attorney, thank God, lost to Ann Davison. But she's the one who got in trouble for her tweets, her triggery tweet fingers.
Did she get in trouble, really? She just kind of got called out for them. She got called out for it.
Yeah, she didn't really care. But I think the only reason we elected a Republican in Seattle, Ann Davison, is because Nicole Thomas Kennedy's tweets were so bad, even Seattleites were like, okay, right.
They were bad.
A little too far. I mean, Nicole Thomas Kennedy had said, like, cops were serial killers. She celebrated the people who were committing acts of arson in the summer of 2020. Like, some really wild stuff. Well, no, Nicole Thomas Kennedy isn't the one running for Seattle City Council. However, the woman who ran her campaign, her campaign manager, has announced that she's running for Seattle City Council position 5. Now, you might be saying, well, Brandy, well, maybe her campaign manager isn't as much of a lunatic. Oh, but she is. Because back when I was working at Fox 13, we were covering, myself, our reporter at the time, Hannah Kim, had been covering at length Nicole Thomas Kennedy's egregious tweets. And then I got a tip that her campaign manager's tweets were pretty bad too. A woman named Ty Reed. Well, Ty Reed is now running for Seattle City Council. And just as a reminder, I'm gonna play a clip of a story I did with Fox 13 at the time, looking into the horrible tweets sent out by this woman, Ty Reed, who now wants to be on the Seattle City Council. But if you think that her tweets are bad, her campaign managers are even worse. Meet Ty Reed, that's her on the left, the picture taken just a month ago. In it, Thomas Kennedy and current Seattle City Councilwoman Tammy Morales. On Reed's shirt, a flaming Seattle police cruiser and the words, "This is a policy proposal." If Thomas Kennedy's Twitter account is a diary of hatred, Reed's is a diary of violence. June 3rd, 2020, this bitch Mayor Durkan is gonna get her ass beat one day. October 2nd, 2020, in response to a shooting in South Seattle, prayers the victim is a cop. Cop spelled KKK. June 10th, 2020, when our news crew was mobbed in the occupied protest zone known as CHOP, Reed tweeted, "Filth don't deserve niceties." It seems no one is spared from her violent thoughts. June 2nd, 2020, she takes aim at then-candidate for president Joe Biden, who'd just given a speech during the height of unrest around race and policing. All his pretty words aren't stopping the police from beating our asses, so the unity bullshit is wasted breath. Hopefully, his last. And how about this one, where her campaign manager called former Seattle Police Chief Carmen Best an Uncle Tom motherfucker? I'm kind of proud at Fox 13 for letting me air that story at the time.
I was shocked.
We did a lot of bleeping of words. That woman just filed to run for Seattle City Council, District 5. First of all, it should be, I think what freaks me out, why I'm laughing so I don't cry. That campaign should be dead on arrival. But in Seattle, you just never know. And so, you know, I think with Nicole Thomas Kennedy, when she ran for City Council, her tweets, it took a little bit for those to be discovered and uncovered. Luckily, because of the diligent work we did at Fox 13 a few years ago, we already know who Ty Reed is. And yes, I take it personally, because she called me filth after our crew got mobbed at CHOP. So Ty Reed, this is personal. This is personal, and I will do everything in my power to make sure that you never set foot inside the Seattle City Council chambers. But I think it just shows you the choice. And this is really, this is kind of always the choice that Seattle voters are faced with more and more as of late, which is, of course, it's just going to be different shades of blue for people who are running for Seattle City Council. But when you look at how vast the difference can be between someone like Olga Sagan and Ty Reed, differing shades of blue can be quite significant. And so this is obviously horrifying. I hope Seattle voters have learned their lesson in saying, hey, we don't need activists like that on the Seattle City Council. We don't need people who hate cops. We don't need people who call the city's first black female police chief an Uncle Tom MF-er. We don't need people who tweet out threats against the mayor and the president of the United States. We don't need people who cheer on acts of violence against a free press. So I don't know to the extent that Ty Reed's candidacy will take off, but I will tell you on this show, hard pass, and we're not going to let anybody forget the vitriol that she has spewed on Twitter over the past few years. All right, coming up after the break, we're going to talk about tomorrow there is a special session in Olympia. Remember, they're going to try to actually pass a law criminalizing substance abuse possession, drug possession in Washington state. I have just learned that there is a deal that has come together on that, so we'll talk about it a little bit coming up next. But first, I've been telling you guys that I am now a member of the First Mark family. Mike and I took the First Mark challenge at firstmarkinsurance.com and really got an awesome assessment of the insurance that we already had on our home, on our cars, et cetera, and where we needed to be kind of ahead of our wedding when we're bundling our lives together. And the cool thing about the FirstMark Challenge is FirstMark is not an insurance company. It's an insurance broker. And so when you work with them, you're not paying them anything. So when you do the FirstMark Challenge and they take you through this process of reviewing your current insurance and recommending whether you need different insurance with different carriers, they are working for you. They're not working for insurance companies. And like I said, it doesn't cost you anything but a little bit of time. Here is Dave Taylor. He is the CEO of FirstMark.
We believe and we say that we will help 100% of the people that we work with. Okay. Now that doesn't mean necessarily that 100% of the people we work with are going to become FirstMark clients, but we believe that we will actually help 100% of the people, whether that be stay with your current carrier, but let's modify your coverage a bit so you're better protected, or ultimately, hopefully come over to FirstMark. We're going to put you with a different company and give you better coverage. Right. So the challenge is really challenging individuals to give us an opportunity to prove that to them. That's really what the FirstMark Challenge is.
Yeah, and the worst case scenario is you do the FirstMark Challenge, it takes you a little bit of time to do a Zoom meeting with them, and then you walk away and you have the same insurance that you had going into it. That is the worst case scenario. But for Mike and I, we knew we were underinsured going in, and in fact, that's what we found out is all the stuff we work for wasn't properly protected. And so we ended up coming away from the FirstMark Challenge, signing up to be a member of the FirstMark family, getting way better insurance for about the same price. So it was a no-brainer for us. And I've also heard stories of people who saved hundreds of dollars. Dory Monson used to do, FirstMark was a sponsor on his show, and he would always tell stories about people who saved hundreds, if not thousands of dollars a year. So really the only thing it's going to cost you is a little bit of time. So check it out, FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. Go there and do the FirstMark Challenge like Mike and I did. All right, the following segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. I'm proud to be an ambassador for Future 42 and their mission to bring common sense and sanity back to the state of Washington. There is a special session that gets underway in Olympia tomorrow, and the sole purpose is for lawmakers to do what they should have done, frankly, 2 years ago, to do what they should have done for sure during the legislative session that ended last month, and that is to pass a law to make sure that drug possession is a crime in Washington state. It should have been the top priority of lawmakers during this legislative session, yet in 4 months they couldn't get it done. Because you had a faction of the Democratic Party in Olympia that simply wants to decriminalize possession of hard drugs. That's really what it boils down to. And you know, you had, I think what's so disappointing about the fact that we even have to have a special session is that there were really, really good bipartisan bills put forth to come up with a law around drug possession that would, yes, prioritize treatment for people who are suffering in the throes of drug addiction, but would also have a criminal law enforcement element to it for people who over and over and over again refuse to get the treatment that they so desperately need. You know, there was a solid bill that passed on a bipartisan basis in the state Senate. 14 Republican yes votes, 14 Democratic yes votes, had the support of mayors and police chiefs across the state, across the ideological spectrum. And that solid bipartisan proposal went to die in the House because House Democrats, House leadership, was held hostage by a small progressive faction of their party that simply does not want to see drug possession criminalized. And, you know, the bill, as you'll recall, crashed and burned on the final day of the legislative session. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Governor Jay Inslee came up and said that he cared about getting this done. And I thought, well, where was he all session? And he announced a special legislative session for the 16th, which obviously is tomorrow. Now, I will say I have been told that there is a deal. There is a deal going ahead of tomorrow to at least something that leadership seems to have agreed on that has bipartisan support. Now, nothing is done until it's done, and who knows what'll happen when this ultimately goes up for a vote, but I'm told that it strikes a really good balance between a carrot and a stick. I'm told that it has the support of many mayors and county executives who are worried about this issue. So I'm very hopeful that after tomorrow, we will have a state law on the books criminalizing drug possession. But I think that tomorrow we also have to be hyper aware of people who vote against it and their motivations for voting against it. I still think, based on what I know, that you're going to have at least a handful of far left members of the state legislature who vote against it because they think a gross misdemeanor is too much, is a penalty that you shouldn't have for drug possession. And the reason why I want to closely keep track of people who voted down for that reason is we have seen the extent of the drug crisis on our streets. I mean, we've been playing video from our friend Jonathan Cho, who has been out firsthand looking at the crisis. I mean, in ways that it's almost sometimes the video he captures too horrific to even show you. I mean, people who are not only using fentanyl and overdosing on fentanyl, but, you know, using this drug called Trank that is literally rotting their flesh away. And when I look at the videos and the images that Jonathan Cho has captured on the streets of Seattle and elsewhere, I can't help but think to myself, what would be the motivation? What would be the motivation for a state lawmaker, for a public servant to look at that and say, let's maintain the status quo? Let's keep going down the track that we're going down right now. To me, the decision is simple. Either you're going to take a vote tomorrow during the special session to save lives, or you're going to take a vote tomorrow during this special session to sign off on the suffering and the deaths on the streets of Seattle and other cities across the state. Because you have these people, and again, this faction of state lawmakers, who, and I do believe it's a faction. I don't believe it's all Democrats in the state house or the Senate. You have this faction of progressive lawmakers who look at, you know, the video that we have seen from Jonathan Cho, and they see compassion. They think it's compassionate to let people kill themselves on our sidewalks and in our alcoves and in our alleyways. They think it's more compassionate to let them die with a needle on their in their arm than to send them to jail for a couple days. And maybe it's just me, but I think people with that position don't belong within 500 yards of the state capitol. They don't belong in any position or post where they have any influence over our drug laws or drug treatment. Because when you take that position, I think you're truly saying to people, I don't care whether those who are suffering die. And I think that's how we have to start looking at those votes, those no votes, which is you don't care if people die. You don't care if someone who's drug addicted breaks into 100 businesses. You don't care about the implications of any of it. And that's selfish to me. And it's a really sick form of empathy, if I'm being honest. So we have our eyes very closely set on the special session that's happening, the hopes that they come together in a bipartisan way and pass a meaningful drug possession statute. Again, just a reminder of why we're here. The state Supreme Court in 2021 struck down our felony drug possession statute at the state level. They found it unconstitutional because it didn't have the word knowingly. It didn't prove, you didn't have to prove that someone knowingly possessed drugs. And so since then, even though you could have just added the word knowingly to state statute and we would have been done with this in 2021, since then we've been trying to come up with a new law that would please, I guess, the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. And so it's taken us all the way to this point where if nothing is done tomorrow, then the state law that's on the books right now sunsets as of July 1st. No one wants to be in that position. So we will keep a close eye on what happens, and I will be keeping a very close eye, and I think you should too, on what state lawmakers vote no on whatever deal they've reached, and what are their motivations. Now, you might have some who vote no because they don't think it goes far enough, but if you have folks who vote no because they think it goes too far, again, I think those are people with a very sick definition of empathy. And I think those are people who are saying with their vote, politicians who are saying with their vote that they don't care if people die. All right, that segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure to sign up for their newsletter so you can get alerted to opportunities to turn your frustration into action. as I said there. Okay, on the Sunday show, Sundays with Subscribers, we had a couple, it was like a 2-hour episode yesterday, if you didn't catch it. We had Tiffany Smiley on to recap her 2022 campaign for Senate, which I'll have more on in just a moment. But we also had on Dr. Raul Garcia, who is a Republican who just announced that he's running for governor. He made the announcement Friday I think outside the Space Needle or at Kerry Park, maybe in Seattle, somewhere, Seattle. Kerry Park, Nicole says, Kerry Park. Quintessential Seattle view. Now, if the name Dr. Raul Garcia sounds familiar, it's because he also ran for governor as a Republican in 2020, but he entered the race really, really late. In fact, I think he filed on the last possible day before the filing deadline. And so he ended up maybe getting just over 5% in the primary. He didn't make it past the primary election. And so we had him in to talk at length. We spoke for about an hour about his campaign, but also, and I'll play this part of the clip for you, about just being realistic. You know, this is someone who's ran before, didn't make it past the primary, and is running as a Republican in a state where it feels at times like it's almost impossible to win a statewide race as a member of the GOP. Listen. I think people would look at the results and be like, okay, here's a Republican who got, I think, fourth amongst the Republican field. So, like, lost to Lauren Culp in the primary, lost to Josh Fried in the primary, lost to Tim Iman in the primary. And so they might look at that and think, well, that doesn't bode well for his ability to beat someone like Bob Ferguson. What would you say to them?
Well, back in 2020, if you saw our progress, right at that primary was when our upswing on the slope was coming to our campaign. We had a lot of momentum, and we were able to raise $420,000 in 10 weeks, and we were able to attain 150,000 votes in those 10 weeks. So it was an everyday thing. I remember back then, why now? As I said, looking back at this idealistic kid that thought that he was going to win an election in 10 weeks and getting serious about the political process in the state of Washington and what Washington needs, I think that for a very long time, we have ran candidates that only represent the ideology of their party.
Okay.
And when we do that, the minority party is always going to lose. If we were to have a candidate that has the intention of representing everyone in the state of Washington, then that candidate will have a better chance of being successful and actually governing successfully. And fundamentally, for me, a governor should be someone that wants to represent the whole state, not only one party's ideology. As a matter of fact, I believe that when you have different ideologies at the table, you usually come out with a better outcome. And this is the problem with our one-party system that we have today. If you have a one-party system, you double down in what you know and you become more and more and more extreme.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. I think the one-party system has been incredibly destructive. But, you know, there's a question of whether voters are ready to vote for something different. And even though, you know, I think every governor runs and says, I want to be a governor for everyone. Like, that's not an uncommon thing. I'm pretty sure Jay Inslee has said it. He's shown that he wasn't a governor for everyone. I don't even know if he remembers that he came from the east side of the Cascades. So I guess you'll have people who hear that and think, well, yeah, the last guy said that too. So how do you prove that you're going to be a governor for everyone? Because you are running as a Republican.
Well, we want to run to find solutions to the problems that we have in our state, right? So we concentrate on issues instead of the usual political divide. Let's concentrate on the issues that really matter to the people of Washington and find solution to those. And if we do that, I think we'll be successful.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear what some of your hallmark issues are going to be that you really think are going to be effective in reaching voters. I got to be frank, though, the name recognition thing is tough. It's not there for you right now. And I don't know if you can buy it. What is your, I know that campaigns are very good at this stuff. They can look at, like, how much will it cost to get Dr. Raul Garcia enough name recognition on the west side of the state. Have you guys assessed that and figured out, you know, what it's going to cost to get your name to be a, a, essentially a household name by 2024?
Well, if we look at the past, right, Rob McKenna raised $14 million, and he was the closest to winning the election that we had in the near past. So we believe that we have to be around that figure and that we have to concentrate our campaign heavily on fundraising and making sure that our message of issues comes mm-hmm. out. I don't know about you, but I am tired of living in a divided world.
Yeah.
And I think that my opponents, that is what they're going to represent. They're going to represent, again, a divided world. And I think that people out there are also tired and they want to come together. The Surgeon General just came out and said that we have a big pandemic after the pandemic. And that pandemic is loneliness. People are disconnected. They're not belonging to anything. Well, if we form a campaign that truly is inclusive of everyone and wants to bring these people to feel that they are wanted in the community, to bring these people that are lonely to be in city activities and belong to clubs again and be a part of a neighborhood, be a part of a community, I think that that campaign will grow.
Yeah. So what does that look like? Because like I said, I mean, name recognition, it just is a thing. It is a thing you have to contend with, not only as a Republican from the other side of the Cascades. You mentioned Rob McKenna. I mean, he was Attorney General. And so there was some inherent name recognition where his mm-hmm. name had been on the ballot before. So how do you, I mean, what does that look like from a campaign perspective and what you just talked about, trying to spread the message that you've laid out of unity and bringing communities together? What is your campaign strategy for the west side of the Cascades?
Well, I'll give you a perspective that I know in history. When Florida was a completely Republican state, Janet Reno was running for Attorney General.
Well, you're going on the way back machine. Okay, go ahead.
Yes, we're dating ourselves. But anyway, she knocked on 400,000 doors, right? And she won as a Democrat in a Republican state. So I intend to work really hard. I spoke with Larry Hogan, who didn't really have name recognition when he ran for governor of Maryland. And he said to me, Raul, you know, I went everywhere. I went to birthday parties. I talked to people on the side of the road. I went everywhere. And this is what I intend to do. I intend to hopefully the day before election sit down as President Obama did. I remember looking at him on, watching him on TV, and he said, I did everything I could. Mm-hmm. Now it's up to you. And I want to end up there. So I will work harder than I have ever worked in my life to be able to change the life of 7.8 million people because it's worth it.
So that is part of my conversation with Dr. Raul Garcia, a Republican candidate for governor of Washington in 2024. And, you know, I really enjoyed sitting down and chatting with him. And we talked about a lot, not just my assertion that it's going to be very hard for him to win, but I always believe in being honest. And I think he knows that it's a tall task. I mean, we haven't had a Republican governor in 30 years, although he is getting into the race much earlier. You know, he entered the race in 2020 so late. And now he has 18 months to try to build name recognition, which is going to be challenging. I will say, when it comes to this show, even though that aired on Sundays with subscribers, we will never bottle up candidate interviews behind a paywall. I don't think that whether you're a subscriber or not should mean you can or cannot access information to someone you might want to consider voting for. So we will post the full interview with Dr. Raul Garcia for everyone. Although I will say that if you have $5 and you want to support the show and the work we're doing on Undivided, visit undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. And there you can find out how you can support the show for as little as $5 a month. But again, we'll never bottle up a candidate interview behind a paywall. So we might debut interviews on the Sunday show with candidates, but we will always make sure to post them so anyone can watch, which is very important. All right, coming up next, I mentioned we had Tiffany Smiley on the show yesterday as well on Sundays with subscribers. And then I found out a little piece of information about her PAC based on a Seattle Times article that I got to be honest, it has peeved me off a little bit. So we're going to discuss that in our segment, Unbelievable. But first, are you in the market to sell your home? We have added Sell With West, sellwithwest.com as a sponsor to the podcast. Wes Jones is an awesome real estate agent. He's been doing this for a really long time. And we had him into the studio before we added them as a sponsor to the show. And I asked him a simple question. What can you do as a real estate agent that traditional real estate agents are not doing? Here's what he said.
We have programs in place to help you prep your home. We can help cover your repairs and even cosmetic upgrades where you can pay for those at the, you know, at the closing table. We have a flexible commission structure. We have the absolute best marketing that you're going to find of any real estate agent. And there is a lot of programs and different things that we do that I go pretty in depth with on my website. So you can start by going to sellwithwest.com and go to the sell a house feature. And you can got to go under some of the different programs, you know, that we have to learn a little bit more. If you want to check out your home's value, just plug in your, you know, your address there. And if you want to book a consultation with me, just give me a, you know, just give me a call. My cell phone is there on the website. And, you know, it's super low pressure. You know, I'm going to tell you the truth if this makes sense, you know, or it doesn't for you, and I'm gonna treat you fairly.
Still can't get over the fact that Wes Jones puts his cell phone on his website. I mean, I think that probably says a lot about him as a real estate agent that he wants to be accessible, but I'm like, brave man. So if you're in the market to sell your home, check out sellwithwest.com. That's sellwithwest.com. Whether you just want to go there and see what your home might be worth or call Wes on his cell phone and inquire about what he would recommend in terms of selling your home now, what he can do to help you get a top offer for your home with the fewest possible contingencies. So visit sellwithwest.com, a better way to sell your home. Okay, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. Yesterday on Sundays with Subscribers, we aired an interview I did with 2022 candidate for Senate Tiffany Smiley. Now, Tiffany Smiley ran as a political newcomer in 2022 against U.S. Senator Patty Murray. She lost the campaign, but we wanted to have her in, you know, as candidates are starting to announce for 2024, just to do this honest assessment of, okay, what went wrong in 2022? What would you have done differently, if anything? And so I really enjoyed that aspect of the conversation. I thought it was really, really interesting, and I think Republicans can take a lot from some of the challenges that she had around fundraising, et cetera. But another topic that we discussed was a political action committee that Tiffany Smiley launched after she lost that campaign. It's called Endeavor. The website shows, you know, a picture of Tiffany Smiley, and it talks about what the purpose of Endeavor is, which is not to support, you know, a candidacy for Tiffany Smiley, but it is to do something that I think is great, which is to support political outsiders who want to run for Congress, political outsiders like herself when she ran for Senate, and to try to make sure that they have the money and the infrastructure to be able to be successful. And on its surface, that sounds amazing. I love it. And I talked to Tiffany about Endeavor when she was on the show on Sunday. So talk about Endeavor.
Yes. Yes, I'm very excited about Endeavor. You know, what's interesting is a lot of my team still stayed together, and that's unheard of in politics.
Yeah.
Usually when a candidate loses, everyone splits and goes their separate ways and climbs their own ladders. But our team stayed together, and we looked at each other and just said, what are we going to do? Because this wasn't for naught. What we did was incredible here in Washington State. And so we launched Endeavor PAC, a PAC that will support and help political outsiders get into Congress, and we'll look at a few Senate races as well. But something that is unique is we were, as a political outsider, I was able to build a very large small dollar donor base, which is incredibly hard to do as a new candidate. So we can use that to help other political outsiders get into office, get across the line, and start to work on legislation that impacts people's lives.
So is this kind of going to be full swing for 2024?
Yes, that is our hope. We're actively fundraising and talking to some folks right now. So we will be ready and prepared to be helpful in the next cycle.
If you do run in 2024 for something, your own PAC couldn't fund your campaign, right?
You know,
how would that work? I don't know even, so.
I don't even know the answer to that.
Yeah, interesting.
I'm not setting this up for myself at all.
It just came to my mind. I was like, very curious, like, oh, very smart, no. Tiffany Smiley. I don't know what the rules are on that.
No. Okay. No, that is not the intent of it at all. It's so we can take what we built to help others.
I'm not setting this up for myself. That's not the intent of it at all. So here I am on Sunday pushing out this interview we did with Tiffany Smiley on Sundays with subscribers. And then I see an article drop from the Seattle Times. I was like, you got to be kidding me. So this is from Jim Bruner at the Times. The headline, Smiley Pack for Political Outsiders Actually Pays Campaign Debt. And the article gets into the fact that the Endeavor Pack actually goes, and a big chunk of the money goes, and I'll get to the fine print that explains this in a moment, to helping to pay off the campaign debt from Tiffany Smiley's 2022 campaign for U.S. Senate. Now, I didn't even think to ask Tiffany that. I didn't even know that you could use a PAC in that way. I don't know everything, okay? I didn't know that you could use a PAC in that way. You know, that's express purposes for one thing, but that if you read the fine print, the money you give it is first and foremost going to retire campaign debt from a previous campaign. So I didn't even know to ask her about that. But you did notice that I asked her, hey, is this going to be used for you? And she said no. And one of the things that Jim Bruner points out in this article is that on multiple occasions when Tiffany has done interviews about Endeavor Pack, she has said in one instance in an interview in March, she said, quote, every dollar amount goes directly toward helping candidates. And when I hear that, I think, okay, well, the money is going to go toward helping political outsiders. But I had Nicole grab the fine print, because the Times says if you read the fine print on the Endeavor Pack website and you go like 8 paragraphs down the fine print, it would tell you that the first $2,900 from any single individual's contribution shall go to Smiley for Washington, Inc. to retire debt from the 2022 general election. The next $5,000 would go to the Endeavor Pack. It continues in the fine print. The first $5,800 from any joint individual contribution shall go to Smiley for Washington, Inc. to retire debt from the 2022 general election. The next $10,000 shall go to Endeavor Pack. It continues in the fine print. The first $2,900 from any federal non-multi-candidate PAC shall go to Smiley for Washington, Inc. to retire debt from the 2022 general election. The next $5,000 shall go to Endeavor PAC. And then it continues. The first $5,000 from any federal multi-candidate PAC contribution shall go to Smiley for Washington, Inc. to retire debt from the 2022 general election. The next $5,000 shall go to Endeavor PAC. And you know, Jim Bruner points out that she's got a pretty substantial debt left from her 2022 campaign. And so in theory, a lot of the money of people who are donating to the Endeavor Pack under the premise of it's going to support political outsiders is going to retire campaign debt and is not actually going to help political outsiders run for Congress. Now, in fairness, and as the Seattle Times points out, you know, they point to examples of PACs from Democrats and Republicans that really are fast and loose with their descriptions. And so I think there is an overall takeaway here of if you're donating money to a PAC, read the fine print and be very, very sure of how that money is going to be used. So I think outside of Endeavor and all of that, I think that's a good idea. Now, I am, before I get to Nicole, because Nicole reached out to the Smiley camp to get a response to this, because I was a little peeved last night, I'm going to be honest, and here's why. I don't like when people mess with someone's money. And I'm sorry, if I'm going to platform Tiffany Smiley for a half hour on my show, and she's talking about this Endeavor Pack and telling you here's what it's for, and then I find out that had you been convinced by watching Sundays with Subscribers yesterday to give $100, $500 of your hard-earned money to help with a cause that sounds great on the surface, helping political outsiders run for Congress, I feel like crap if you did that after watching that interview only to find out that that money went to retire her 2022 campaign debt. That bothers me because I don't like when people mess with your money. Now, if you're fine after hearing that and it's no big deal and you're like, hey, I'll help Tiffany Smiley pay off her campaign debt and I'll donate anyway, then that's great. But I think that you ought to be able to go into it knowing fully what you're giving money to without having to read 8 paragraphs into the fine print. And then here's what bothers me even more. Nicole, you reached out to Smiley's camp, and I know Tiffany Smiley very well by now. Mm-hmm. And I'll end up reaching out to her personally about this because I am peeved about it for the reason I just described, which is it makes me sad if some of you donated money thinking it was for one thing and then it's going to another thing. And then this makes me mad because you reached out to saying, hey, can you comment on the Times article? And what did they tell you?
Right. I got, there is no comment in regards to the Times article.
Come on.
That was a little disappointing to me.
That's really disappointing because if this is a common thing or if you can defend it, then look, we've been very friendly. We gave her a huge platform to talk about, you know, her political past or political future, about Endeavor. You at least owe us an explanation for, hey, why were you not more forthcoming with the fact that if one of my viewers wants to spend $1,000 helping your cause, that it's actually going to go to retire your campaign debt?
It's really disappointing.
It's really disappointing.
It was a really great interview, and she was really, we met her husband. They were so sweet, and I'm really disappointed that I couldn't even get a comment.
Yeah, at the very least, like, explain. Like somebody asked, how much debt? Nicole, can you look at that Times article? How much debt is it that $1 million in debt? $1 million in debt. So it's not as if they've got, like, five grand to pay off.
Right.
And they just got a little bit, and then they can move on. It's $1 million.
Right.
And so if you go out.
How do you spend that money that you, I'm kind of curious how that all works, how that normally gets paid
off.
Yeah,
your campaign can go into debt. During the process. But yeah,
but I mean, how it gets paid off.
Right. They need to, and as the Times said, and look, again, the Times laid out that there are, you know, PACs have been a very fast and loose when it comes to how, what they tell you about where the money's going to.
Right.
And so again, I go back to, it sounds like it's not just a Tiffany Smiley thing that you need to really read the fine print, and shame on me. Actually, I should have read the fine print on the Endeavor PAC before I had her to talk about it.
Lesson for us.
I should have read the fine print. That is my bad. And I feel terrible if you donated money. And in fact, if you donated money based on watching the show, I would ask the PAC for the money back. Mm-hmm. I would ask the PAC. And if you feel duped by it, I would ask them for the money back. So I was planning to have a much different conversation about this today because I really thought that Smiley's camp would offer us some sort of comment or explanation. And when I got no comment, then I was just a little pissed off. As you can tell, I don't like when people mess with your money. As someone who has to sit here 4 days a week and ask you to give us $5 a month to do the podcast, like I always take that very seriously. And Nicole knows, like, I'm very serious about, I need to make sure, like, we're doing everything right and everything's good and they're getting their money's worth. And so then to, you know, have her sit here and say, here's what the Endeavor PAC is going to do. And then to find out literally that night that it's actually going to a big chunk of it to retire campaign debt. I'm like, well, now I feel like I just misled my subscribers. Or allowed her to mislead my subscribers. And I take that personally. It bothers me. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I think it's a little unbelievable. So I'm going to try to reach out to Tiffany personally about it and just chat it over with her and offer an opportunity to come back on to discuss it. Because no comment to me, that's just kind of unacceptable. Okay, let's dip outside of Washington State for a moment. Oh, this is good news too. I love this. As much as I'm annoyed that the campaign cycle starts so early for 2024... Every once in a while, a candidate pops up where I'm like, oh, I like that. Like Olga Sagan. I'm like, do it, Olga. Can I take like 5% credit for Olga running? Like 5%?
Sure.
We did pester her a lot.
Sure.
Okay.
I'll
Olga,
give it to you.
Can I have 5% of the credit if you
take
win?
It.
If you win and save Seattle, I'm taking 50% of the credit. But anyway, another one that I thought was, I was really excited to hear. I'm not necessarily surprised, but I've talked a lot about how I'm a huge fan of Miami Mayor Francis Suarez. I've met him a couple times out doing stories like at the southern border, but I have interviewed him rather a couple times. And when it comes to Miami, so he's a Republican, although I don't think he ever really gets into the fray. And I'm sure there's a lot of people who vote for him who don't even know what he is. But he was able to win in deep blue areas, you know, in Miami-Dade County. And his city is bucking all the worst national trends. Crime in Miami is down, violent crime. When look at everywhere else. Miami used to be like the murder capital of the country. And they have a budget deficit, like the biggest one they've ever had. And he is out there actively recruiting business investment for his city. You know, when West Coast states like, well, cities like San Francisco and Seattle are scaring away tech investment, he's like actively trying to recruit them to come to Miami and sees the value. You go to Miami, barely any homeless people. So Miami's doing well and bucking national trends. And so I had said on the show about a year ago, I think it was actually last fall, that I thought Francis Suarez would be a wonderful addition to a presidential ticket. But he's clearly going to run for president. I think this makes it clear. So there's this article in Politico, the headline, Miami's mayor mulls a White House run. Now you might look at that and say, well, that doesn't mean he's going to run. Except he literally pinned that article to his Twitter. And he said, big decisions ahead. And it's his pinned tweet. So I'm sorry. If you're not actually going to run, unless you just really love attention, you don't pin it. You don't make it your pinned tweet. I think he's going to run. Well, for president, and I love it.
It gets the buzz going. But then also, do you think that maybe he'll go for if DeSantis runs for president, then he goes for governor, maybe?
Oh, sure. So
it's just to create buzz.
Yeah, there are people who run for president because maybe they're seeking an appointment or like a vice president, or they just want to raise their political star a little bit.
Right.
But I really think if Americans would allow themselves just to be happy and content with a functioning government, that he would do such a good job. Because man, one of the things I really like about him, workhorse. Mm-hmm. He is an absolute, like, no quit. Like, I follow the news in Miami, and we have Miranda on a lot for Florida Report. He is constantly on the go and not in an attention-seeking way.
Right.
Just, like, getting stuff done.
Right. Unlike our current president, who takes a lot of vacation days, that's for sure.
Well, and also
kind of like the last president, except for without the attention-seeking part of it, right?
Well, and Francis Suarez is very young. So Francis Suarez age, oh gosh, we're going long again today, 45. So the point I made back in the fall is he'd have enough life left in him to maybe serve his two terms as a vice president to someone, and then two terms as the president. Mm-hmm. I just think it's very rare, and I've talked to, for instance, former Mayor Jenny Durkan. When it comes to the Conference of Mayors, she got to know Francis Suarez, and as a Democrat, a progressive Democrat, she loved him too.
Wow.
And so I think he has cross-party appeal, but he just has, like, no quit. And I feel like we need someone who doesn't have, like, this national stigma and drama around them, who wants to get into the White House and just work themselves to the bone.
That's what we want for every role.
And we never get it.
We never get it.
So anyway, that's another one where I'd probably have to tell you guys, hey, I've donated to his campaign. Does it bother you if I donate to campaigns? Olga was the first one.
I love it.
So, I mean, it is public. You would have found out anyway. You could go on the little website.
Isn't that sad that we have to celebrate hard work? It should be a thing.
I know. We have to celebrate competency. we have to celebrate competency, but we should, it's gotten so bad that we need to celebrate competency. So people, it's positive reinforcement. We talk about that on the show quite a bit. Positive reinforcement goes a long way. Okay. Another national story I wanted to get to, man, the border crisis, right? So we're talking about the end of Title 42 and how that was going to manifest. Bill Malusian over at Fox, who does an awesome job at the border, man, he and Ali, between the two of them, they're just nailing it. He tweets out yesterday, and this is terrifying, but it's not a surprise. He says, per multiple Customs Border Protection sources, Border Patrol agents in San Diego sector arrested an Afghan national on the FBI's terror watch list after he crossed illegally with a group of migrants near Ode Mesa, California on Wednesday. I'm told FBI confirmed the match and is leading the investigation. So that was even before the end of Title 42. And then there was a Jim Desmond, who is on the San Diego County Board of Supervisors, so where this crossing happened, confirmed that he put out a statement saying that, I received word from Border Patrol officials that an Afghani on the terror watch list was arrested at our southern border. And he goes on to say, as a nation, we must remain steadfast in our commitment to protect the safety and security of our citizens. A strong and orderly border process is crucial in preventing individuals with nefarious intentions from entering our country. And look, this is, again, this is, of course this would happen. That can't be a surprise to anyone. When you see, if you have the worst of intentions against the United States, and you're watching the news and you see thousands of people not only pouring across the border, but being welcomed with these Ziploc baggies full of stuff, including a cell phone that they can use, and you're thinking, wow, that's a pretty easy way into the United States. Why would you not, as a terrorist, gain access to the U.S. that way? Of course they would. So it's not about outright demonizing and vilifying and suggesting that every single person who enters the country illegally is a danger. No, but we have processes in place for people who have legitimate reasons to come here in that manner, asylum, for instance. And they can do that, but unless we have a very strict border process, an orderly, as it was said there by the Board of Supervisors, border process, where we know every person who's coming into the country, of course there are going to be people like an Afghan on the FBI's terror watch list. And it's incredibly naive to believe that there wouldn't be. And now I'm just worried that it's so far gone. I mean, how do you even begin to wind back what's happening at the southern border? I mean, it would take resources on a level that I don't believe the United States possesses right now, unless you have a full-on placement of National Guard troops all across the southern border in like a legit line. It's going to take a lot of resources to come back from this place that we've been in. Okay, coming up, we'll take your questions from the live stream. I'm going long today. I'm sorry. Wow. But first, you know what, Nicole? I had a great weekend in the sun. And I wore a dress wine tasting that I haven't worn in 2 years.
Good for you.
And I felt great. Do you know why I felt great?
I do.
Why? Tell the people.
East Side Weight Loss Clinic.
Great. Yes, because I've lost 35 pounds on the East Side Weight Loss Clinic plan. I should have taken a picture of me in my dress.
You should
have. I looked so cute. It was like all florally, but it just feels good to be, you know, when I think of the hot weather, I'm like, it's less clothes, right? And if you're not feeling good about yourself, the prospect of fewer clothes doesn't sound great. But anyway, like I said, I don't have to worry about that because I'm down 35 pounds on the East Side Weight Loss Clinic plan. I started in November, lost most of that in just 2 months before the end of the year. And I've been able to maintain my weight loss and even lose a few, that graphic's out of date. It said 34 pounds and I'm now 30. I'm sweating right now. It's hot in here. I'm now 36 pounds down. So if you would like to just get in better shape and feel better about yourself before summer, there's still plenty of time. Visit eastsideweightlossclinic.com. That's eastsideweightlossclinic.com and just schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan on their website. It's super easy to do. And in fact, you can do the whole program virtually through an app on your phone. You get helpful little tips every day just to help you stay on track. And I've heard from so many of you who have done it, and you're just looking great before summer. Maybe we need to have an undivided meetup of people who've lost weight on the East Side Weight Loss Clinic plan at the beach.
Eat.
Oh. No, at the beach, and we can all be in our bikinis or whatever. Boxer, what are the...
I bet that will be a popular event.
What are the male... What's the male version
the Speedo?
Of... Speedo. Mm-hmm. Bikinis and Speedos. Anyway, mm-hmm. Getting really serious. Okay, let's get to comments. Your comments before we get to our sanity check of the day. Wow, a lot of them today. Did you have a, we missed a comment from the show on Thursday, a super chat on YouTube. Can you find that? Our apologies. Usually we read the super chats first, but we just missed one. We saw it after the fact. So Nicole, go find that. On Olga Sagan running for Seattle City Council, Timothy writes, a political solution will never solve a spiritual problem. Do you think what's happening in Seattle is a spiritual problem? I don't know. Maybe that's part of it. Julie says, yes, Olga, go get him, girl. Grateful for common sense bravery. And it is bravery, by the way. She will be vilified by the far fringes of the internet. And we have to stand with Olga Sagan during all of that. Jordan writes, Jordan? Yes, I wish I could vote for her. Would love to give a shout out to Adam Fortney for Snohomish County Sheriff. Please have him on your show. I think we're going to have Adam on to talk about this one-year-old who OD'd in his county. Very sad. Aaron says $300 is the limit for contributions, individual contributions for Seattle City Council races. He says that's insane considering the several $2,000 contributions for Bob Ferguson. These limits need to be flattened for all races. Cindy says Olga should run for mayor. Well, let's see how she does. I think Bruce is doing an okay job at mayor. Let's see how she does for Seattle City Council. On Ty Reed, the campaign manager for Nicole Thomas Kennedy, who has a Twitter account that honestly is just about the worst I've ever read when it comes to the violence in some of her tweets. On her running for Seattle City Council position 5, Matthew says, Ty Reed seems to be very welcoming and inclusive, only to certain kinds of people. DC writes, we need leadership that upholds and stands behind the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Keep it that simple. I'm not for equity, I'm for equality. Equity only allows the U.S. to have the same and equal outcomes. allows us to have the same and equal outcomes. If I work harder, longer, and smarter than others, then I expect to gain more. Those who don't, won't. So equity shouldn't be anyone's goal. And I intend to agree with that. On the special session tomorrow that is looking to fix the Blake decision, so to put a law on the books in Washington state that would, criminalize the drug possession, Timothy writes, well, it is true that getting rid of these drugs is important. What is even more important is tackling the reason why so many people resort to them in the first place. How is sending them to jail going to help them? They will just come out and continue to do the same thing while they continue to live off our hardworking taxpayer dollars. I disagree. Now, will some people get out of jail and do the same thing? Yeah. But I have met and interviewed when I was at Fox people who, if not for a few days of sobriety in a jail cell, would not be clean and sober today. So I think there are instances where it can work. And look at it this way. If they go to jail and they come out and they just start using again, then what has been lost by that? What has been lost by that? But if they go to jail and they come out sober and they make a different decision, a lot has been gained. On guns, we're going to get to that topic, insanity check. I don't know who left this comment. The gun violence this past weekend just proves that Inslee's gun grab laws do not work to curb gun violence. Hey, they signed the assault weapon ban was an emergency. So it took effect the day he signed it. How's that working out for you? On Tiffany Smiley's PAC spending, Vicky says, I am so disappointed to hear that. I think she got around the idea you asked her about whether she was running in reference to using the money. Still, she was less than forthcoming. And I agree. Tiffany didn't lie to me. I didn't ask her the question of, is this being used to retire your 2022 campaign debt? What I asked her is, hey, if you run in 2024, is this PAC going to fund that? And she said, well, I don't think so. And balked at that idea like she didn't. And I think that would have been an opportunity for her to say, well, it's going to my 2022 campaign. I think that would have been forthcoming. Gary said, I really like Smiley and did vote for her, but I'm listening very carefully to her ethical ways because after the no comment, she's sounding more and more like a typical sleazy politician. The no comment does bother me. Matt says, it's like politics is a dirty business. Yeah. And again, I think this is probably fairly normal with PACs that we have to unfortunately be reading fine print, which is incredibly bothersome to me that we have to even do that. Okay, Nicole, what do you say? Oh, did you find it? Did you find the super chat?
I did not find it.
Oh, no.
It apparently has been gone, but we'll go back. I'll try to find it.
I promise. I feel so bad. We saw it after the fact.
It was actually just asking you to talk about something, and I think we did eventually talk about it. So,
do you remember what it was?
We'll come up with it.
Okay. My apologies. We missed the super chat, and then I was like, there it is. Okay. Let's get to our sanity check for the day and wrap up this episode, shall we? So you can get outside and enjoy the sun. Go. There was this video circulating on social media over the weekend. I was like, oh my God, that's horrifying. So whenever the weather is nice, violence tends to increase, especially shootings at gang-related shootings, because whenever you have people who are congregating outside in big groups, you have more of a possibility for confrontations. And so we always expect a little bit of an increase, you know, in the summer months, but now we have this hot weekend and we saw a lot of violence this past weekend, which has me pretty freaked out for how bad this summer is going to be. But a guy named Matthew Ryan Case on Twitter took this video. He says, and he said when he sent it out, we've been able to confirm it, that it showed a shooting on 21st and Union. This happened on Saturday. So he's, you know, it's clearly shooting out the window at this verbal altercation. And I will warn you, there might be some swear words that get dropped as part of this, but what you're going to see, and it's very dark in the video, but he's shooting this video outside his window. There's this a large group of people, 21st and Union. They're yelling at each other, and then all of a sudden, gunfire breaks out. And it's like a scene out of a movie. So I don't know who he's, and then you see him drop, you know, below the window. I mean, I didn't even count all that gunfire. And I don't know who he's talking to in terms of like, get down, because obviously you can get hit by a stray bullet really easily. It doesn't sound like police know, I mean, police got 911 calls, obviously, to the scene. Doesn't sound like anyone was injured or killed, although if they were shot, it's very possible they just never took themselves to Harborview, right. Which would not be a rare thing if they mm-hmm. weren't like fatally wounded. Mm-hmm. So that's a shock to me, considering how close those groups were together when they started firing at each other. But you just look at, Nicole made me a quick list of all the violent crimes that happened this weekend. There was a man shot and killed in downtown on Wednesday night. Up in the Windermere neighborhood of Seattle, there was a carjacking. The suspect was fleeing and shot another driver in like a road rage incident, yes. Which you were like, I didn't even hear about this.
How do these things just go under the radar?
Because there's so much of it happening. There was a woman who was just a bystander shot at the Elkhai boat launch, which yeah. Elkhai is beautiful. It's my favorite place in the city, but there's always violence there because, again, you have this mm-hmm. congregation of groups. And then there was a man shot and killed on Saturday at Elkhai Beach. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm a little freaked out given the current crime trajectory about what this summer is going to look like. And I think this just has to be an absolute wake-up call for everyone in Seattle about what we need to demand of candidates who are going to be running. You know, Lisa Herbold, praise Jesus, speaking of Elkhai Beach in West Seattle, she's the councilwoman for Elkhai and for West Seattle, and the somehow lands herself as chair of the public safety committee when she has no care or concern for public safety. I really hope someone steps up to represent that district who really truly sees what's happening on our streets and wants to be a force for good and a force for change. This is going to be a pivotal year for Seattle. And I can only hope that the voters of Seattle find reason, common sense, sanity, and look at what's happening across the city and say, we don't want the city to be like this anymore. Ideology is one thing, but we need to choose people who, yes, share our values, but who don't share some of the really, really scary positions that some of the current council members share around police defunding, vilification of the police. You know, Lisa Herbold is someone who tried to push to essentially give a poverty defense for every misdemeanor crime. That period in Seattle has to be put behind us. And I think people like Olga Sagan running for the downtown seat and some other folks who have stepped up to run across the city could be really, really good for not only Seattle, but for the rest of the state. Because if we can say that that kind of destructive ideology is not acceptable in Seattle, then it won't be acceptable anywhere else in Washington either. And I think that would be a very, very good thing. All right, that's it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow. If you would like to become a subscriber to Undivided, we'd love to have your support. And you get access to exclusive benefits, including a monthly subscriber Q&A with me and our Sundays with Subscriber in-depth episodes on Sundays where we have important conversations on critical issues. You can sign up at undividedpod.com. Undividedpod.com. There you'll also find ways to watch the show, listen to the show, and reach out to Nicole and I if you have anything you want to say or any hot news tips, story leads. All right, until tomorrow at noon, again, thank you for just being sane. I appreciate all of you. It's just nice to hear your comments grounded in sanity for a change, and then I'll go get on Twitter and be reminded that there's also insane people out there, but at least we have each other. I'll see you tomorrow.